is Absolute Rally, powered by the Kielder Works team. Cordless tools tailored for the world of motorsport.
Hello everyone, welcome to Absolute Rally, episode 15, season 21. I never get, I get dizzy even mentioning once we get beyond 10 episodes. Normally, if it's over 10 episodes, it's the Christmas episode, which ironically I am working on at the moment, because the boys put zero effort into the Christmas quizzes compared to me. So, but they are all here this week, so I'll let them come back on that. Hello, Jackie Boy Banyan.
Hello.
You're right.
I'm all good. Are you?
I'm all the best for speaking to you, Jack.
In my defence, I did suggest that we didn't do the Christmas quiz. So
you were one of the ones that voted for the FFS.
Yeah.
Yeah, you was. So did I. Funnily enough. Trevor Agnew. Hello, sir.
Hello. What's the difference in having seasons or just having like episode numbers? Why do you change?
I've always had seasons.
Yeah, but yeah. So, yeah, we always do a lot of things. It doesn't mean it's like...
Okay, the reason why there was seasons is it was a commercial thing of when we were selling advertising, to be honest.
All right.
So we did them in blocks.
So I see.
It just came very... It's a lot more easy. It's a lot more accountable when you do it that way, when you do it in blocks. 10 as an example. Whereas this season, obviously, we're running slightly off kilter because the world's slightly off kilter.
So I love this podcast.
There you go. Sorry.
I love this podcast because we're 30 seconds in and Trevor's just had a go at you for having seasons of a podcast.
Whoa. I haven't had a go. I'm just trying to work out why I have seasons or don't have seasons. Glad. I had the same dilemma. Do I have seasons or not?
Do you have a podcast, Trev? Not that I've been introduced yet, but I didn't know you had a podcast.
Who are you?
That's Ryan Champion, sorry, in case you didn't know.
Okay.
Yeah.
Did anyone know that John Desborough's got a book out as well?
Has he now? Wow. Wow, I actually love the Christmas advert, by the way, that his son's done.
Is it called Dorset's Finest?
That's the follow-up, Trev. That's the follow-up. He's not with us this week. John will be with us next week. I know. So there you go. So yeah, so it's the old guard. We're all back together again, like some kind of crap boy band, it has to be said. Right, a couple of things going on. We are going to be doing the Kielder quiz in about 20 minutes' time with Steve Bolos from Kielder, of course, talking about commercial partners and backers. He was just an absolute legend. So we're gonna keep that until he joins us. So we're going to address a few things a bit fast and loose, shall we say. So I'm going to come to you first, Jack. We speculated, it must be 3 or 4 episodes back now. I don't know, I'm losing track of time, but the concerns with regards to perhaps losing a manufacturer come 2022. But there's a story broke as we record that all three manufacturers have committed to 2022 regulations.
It looks that way. Dirtfish David Owens Rally has posted that, so it looks like it's usually true when it comes from him. So congrats to David for that little scoop. But yeah, it looks like all the manufacturers have signed up for 2022, according to him. No official confirmation from those manufacturers yet. Apparently that's expected later this week or next week, which knowing the FIA could turn into a few months' time. But anyway, we've got some confirmation and we've got some positivity from the WRC manufacturers, which is good news. And obviously we've talked about on the podcast, we've talked about Hyundai potentially switching to GTs or doing something else. So it's the start of a good story. I won't pinch Ryan Champion's talking point that we discussed off the podcast because he can do that himself in a second. But just nice to know that those manufacturers are, you know, theoretically joining again and that Hyundai staying. M Sport are obviously, always in a difficult position when it comes to funding their program as the only privateer. So nice to hear that they'll sign up as well. And, they have the most difficulty out of the manufacturers to make things work, despite how good the business is. So that's a nice thing. And obviously, Toyota, we know, are heavily invested, plans to build new cars and all sorts around the WRC. So yeah, good to see them all back. And, hopefully they can, this news can attract another manufacturer or two in.
I hope so. I'm going to come to Trev first because I know Rye's desperate to speak, so I'm not going to allow him. Trev, I don't even know what I'm going to put to you, but just so I don't have to bring Ryan in.
Trev, I've got a question for you.
Yeah.
You worked with manufacturers a lot currently and in your career as well. What does this kind of news do as a member of a team, when you kind of got one eye on next, or the year after next, you're wondering, you know, how secure your future is. You know, when you see news like this come out, how big is that mentally for you, knowing that your kind of future's at least a little bit more secure than it was before?
Yeah, it means that we need to get everybody around the table as soon as, so I can get the contract signed. So if anything does happen in this mad commercial world going forward, I've got my contract. That's first and foremost in my mind anyway, once you get that sorted then. Joking aside, it is great to have all three manufacturers or teams involved in it. M-Sport, you've got to take your hat off to them. You know, they're not selling those type of cars. Nobody is. So commercially, it doesn't make a lot of sense for them to be involved in it, apart from brand awareness, I suppose. But Toyota, we knew, was always going to be there. Hyundai have indicated that they're going to leave by, well, they're going to take up sports cars in 2023. So good to have them on board and everybody playing the hybrid card.
There you go. There you go. Ryan's still desperate to speak, and I feel like we're playing that little game like Piggy in the Middle. I still haven't brought him in yet, and I'm still trying to find ways not to bring him in, but I will, because I'm not that cruel. Ryan's
going to need to be good, though, isn't it?
Well, I'm not that worried. I am honestly not that worried.
This is going to be good.
This is going to be good, right? We built it up, Sean.
What were we talking about?
Well, thanks for listening.
Just my point was that hopefully now that's Hyundai signed, well, in theory signed up for 2022, that's them staying for a bit longer, because as we know, the new regulations are coming for 2022, which is a big undertaking. So yes, anybody can pull out at any time, but hopefully if they're here for 2022, they'll be here a bit longer.
Volkswagen, Subaru.
But Volkswagen never actually got around to homologating the car, did they? So
they ran it in Wales.
Yeah, but they didn't homologate it.
Just saying. Subaru.
Yeah, they can pull out, but my point is, if they're not, it'd be unusual to plan to develop a brand new car to new regulations with all that cost just for 1 year.
It would. Volkswagen. Anyway, where were we?
Yes, but there was bigger things at play there, wasn't there?
There was bigger commercial pressures. I'll be honest with you, I'm just poking the bear because I know it annoyed you when I said it before starting recording. So there you go. So apologies for metaphorically speaking, poking the bear.
Oh, don't say sorry.
Just keep poking him. Is that what you say?
Exactly. Get a bigger stick.
Stop poking him, but just accept that you've done it, and you know there's no need to apologise. That just makes you look weak.
So you're telling me that I should be taking ownership of these situations?
I said you're weak.
Yeah. Thanks, Jack. Thanks, guys. The self-esteem's rocketing.
The train has fallen off the track.
Yeah, it is. It is. In fact, you know what? I'm just going to unplug it and walk away. Just leave it all talking to yourself.
Oh, like, don't do that.
Like I did before when the recording didn't work. So speaking of which, Jack, as you just last spoke, speaking of record not work, full disclosure, Jack mentioned last week about the two events that were going on over in New Zealand last weekend. So it was going to be on the Saturday they were using the WRC stage that would have been part of Rally New Zealand this year, and Jack's Ridge event, which Jack went through a whole list of drivers that was going to be doing it. And we got to Blair Bartles, who runs the New Zealand Rally Championship, is also involved in that. He joined us. We recorded a fantastic piece and we talked about New Zealand rallying and everything. It didn't record. So apologies, Blair. I have sent you an email on it, and we will get you back next week. So, Jack, we did cover that very thing you spoke about last week, and I thought, I'm not going to tell Jack. I've done all this work and all this research, and I was just going to roll it out as part of the podcast, but it didn't work. Sorry, Jack. There you go. I'm apologising again. I'm just a trembling mess at the moment.
I am gutted that we haven't got that, because I think that would be a good piece, but it'll be good to get him back and hear
gutted,
a little
Jack,
bit more about it.
An hour of my life. And it was a lovely conversation as well.
Sorry, Tony.
Yeah, just laugh
Tony,
it up.
Tony, you spend an hour a day worrying about politics on Twitter. So, I mean, go. You must have plenty of time on your hand.
I don't. Do you know what? I hate getting involved in politics on Twitter. In fact, I've actually deleted some of it, to be perfectly honest, because I find it really frustrating. I never normally put my head above a parapet on stuff like that. But still, there you go. There you go. Trump's an arse. Moving forward, anyway. This is going to be one of those. I know it's going to turn this. I got excited. So speaking about Twitter, I got quite excited by the Rally 3 Fiesta, which a lot of people did, other than Ryan Champion, who just seemed to got mildly annoyed by it.
I wouldn't say annoyed. I just think we'll have to wait and see, won't we? We just need other manufacturers to commit, and then when we get competition, then it can be good. But if there's only one manufacturer, it's a bit of a damp squib, isn't it? So we just need other manufacturers in there.
And I think they'll come. Surely everybody. All right. I'm going to put you on pause for a second. And this is a short answers from both Jack and Trev, if at all possible. The jump from, let's just call them R2 cars, 16 or 1 litre front wheel drive, 5-speed sequential gearbox cars. We'll call them R2. We're not going to use the FIA criterion in this. The R2 car to an R5 jump is way too big. Yes or no, Jack?
No.
Right. Short answer. Thanks. Trevor Agnew.
Don't know.
Okay. Okay.
Well, Tony, can I ask, were you asking in terms of performance or cost or both?
But everything across the board. It's just too big a jump to go from an R2 car, which is a £60,000 car that effectively can be run by yourselves to some degree and maybe outsource some bits and pieces to it, as opposed to a WRC2 level car, which takes a lot more looking after.
I think from a cost perspective, it's probably a nice step. But from a performance perspective, I don't think it's needed.
So you don't think that there needs to be something with four-wheel drive in between?
No.
Okay, interesting. No, listen, that's your opinion, and I think you're talking out your arse, but that's fine. That's absolutely fine. Yeah, I've got the fight back now, Jackie. So you poked the bear. No. Genuinely, if that's your opinion,
So what happened in the past? Well, if you went into the Peugeot challenge and you did something around that, and then you get into a four wheel drive car.
You had a Group N four wheel drive car. You know that car that you won the world championship
in? It's a long time ago.
Yeah, but you see the point I'm trying to make here. There was somewhere to go before you got into, a car, a world rally car, as it were, or a Group A car. There was somewhere to go. Now, the structure is very, very different today. I think we'll all admit that. But, going from getting an R2, Ryan, help me out a little bit here. You drove them as well. That jump of getting in sort of front wheel drive car into an R5 car or a Super 2 car is huge.
I think from a driving point of view, I think if you've got a good up-and-coming driver and he's gone well in an R2 car, then we're going old school, aren't we, R2 and R5. I don't think from a driving point of view it's too big a jump, but I agree from a cost point of view and a running cost point of view. That's the key, isn't it?
The running cost, I think,
But then we had a brief conversation about it before. The FIA tried to go down this route and created R4 that had cheaper running costs, and everybody was like, well, yeah, but we'll just buy a used R5 car instead.
That's always a difficult... Unfortunately, I think anything named R4 is a poison chalice. I can remember having a debate 10 years ago with regards to the upgrade kits for Subaru and Mitsubishi of taking them R4. And I can remember having a proper tete-a-tete with somebody quite well known in rally circles who I questioned it, and they said I was wrong. And yet here we are. Genuinely, did anything ever happen with that? No.
Only for certain countries. And that's the problem. As we've talked about before, we've gone down the non-homologated route in this country, allowing even the British Championship was allowing right-hand drive R5 cars, and we were having an open class for different cars and things. And it's only relevant where it's strict FIA classes. That's the problem. And the R4 kit worked in Africa, for example, because the Group N cars were very successful, they were strong, and it just made them a bit faster. But the idea of trying to equalise the old-fashioned Group N cars and the Super 2000 cars, I mean, that just didn't happen, did it? I just think we need to see where R3 goes, and let's hope a couple of other manufacturers get in there and it becomes a competitive class, and then things will change a bit. The issue is, I think, that if you're an aspiring driver, I can see it appeals. If you're a wealthy amateur, it will be the used R5 route again. That's the problem.
I do agree. I had a conversation with somebody yesterday who is looking after a young driver, and we talked about the difference between getting a very early, R5 car as opposed to getting an R3 car. The critical thing in all these things, right, and you know this as well as, if not better than me, is mileages on components. So you can go and get an R5 car for 100 grand, but it's up on its mileage, and all of a sudden, you're 50, 60 grand in.
Yeah, but people still don't see. It's not as simple as that, though, is it? When people are buying them, and it's perception. It's what people are perceived to be driving. And like I said, if there's competition there, that's a different thing. But we need a level of competition.
Yeah. No. Okay. I'll have that, Jack. If you change your mind on anything that we've just discussed, because you were so definitive with your answer.
No, I think Ryan summed up my view in a few more words than you asked me to do it in one.
It was like just.
I will tell you, I've got a. It's not a story, but something I think the Absolute Rally listeners will like.
Go on.
And I always used to be that person a few years ago, when the FIA changed the rules or someone would bring a new rule system in, I would be like, yeah, it's dead easy to explain. This is how it works, and then reel it off, and then. Some people on Twitter would be like, well, I don't understand that. It doesn't really make any sense and whatever. And I would try to help and, you know, explain why it does or doesn't work or whatever. And then we've just got to the current change now where I've become the other person on the other side of the screen where, like, I read Chris Ingram's coming back to do the Canary Island rally in the Clio. And I was like, what is this Clio?
An R5 Clio.
What is it? What class is it in? I don't understand. Can someone explain it to me? I've become that person on the other side of the glass who doesn't really understand what's going on because there's just been so many changes over the past 5 years that are just pointless name changes that don't really make any sense. And then we've got R3, which I just don't understand the idea of, because if you're looking at a ladder, right, the person only gets on the ladder if they're looking to get to the top of the ladder. That's how sport works, right? So is anyone going to really need to go from R2 to the R3, to the R5, if we're using the old terms, which are the only ones that I understand. Because the person, let's take Oliver Solberg, for an example, who's someone who's probably going to end up in the WRC pretty soon. Obviously, he's got his dad's name, and that's helped him a bit. But he's shown the talent, and he's matched it, and he's backed it up. But would he have gone for an R3 car? I don't think he would have. And I think anyone who's performed well in an R2 car and really shown that they are cream of the crop, they've gone straight into an R5 and performed at a top level again. I don't really understand what the need is other than running costs, but I just think it's difficult, isn't it, getting into the debate where you've got people like Chris who clearly has the talent but is not going to have enough money probably to make it to the WRC now. He's really going to struggle to make it to that top level. And I really feel sorry for Chris. I have a lot of sympathy for him. But there's been 50 Chrises over the years. We can all pick people from different decades who've not had the cash to make it, probably had the talent to do it. I don't think that part's changed. So
there's only one Ryan champion. One Ryan champion.
Just Tony, for that. That's why I said I don't know. I don't know what the R3 regulations are. I really don't know, and I haven't taken the time to investigate them. So, I goes back to Jack's point and everybody's point at the end of the day, irrespective of how fast you go from a one-make championship up to be in a situation where you're leading the world championship like Elvin Evans is at the minute. Along the way, you're going to have to find budget. And at some point, that budget, every year, someone once said, if you win a championship, that's brilliant. You just added another knot in the checkbook, in the check that you need for the following year. So you do have to find the budget at some point to run in the biggest private league that you can find to impress the manufacturers so you can get that seat, unless you've got some sort of scholarship with them. None of that changes, irrespective of what type of class. And the drive and talent, if you're good enough and you can door handle a small car, you can quickly, with a bit of seat time, master the next stage up. And even in our case, Neil Wearden went from an F2 kit car into a World Rally car. Now, they're not compatible, really, but, you know, we didn't have much seat time in the World Rally car, but yet you're able to set decent times on it. So, yeah, I understand the philosophy of the ladder talent, and you start off one make championship really cheap. But at some point, like everybody, including Lewis Hamilton, had to do, you're going to have to find the budget to move up the ladder.
Can I just come in there as well, just to add to that, Trev? I actually found a World Rally car easier to drive than a Group N car. Now that might sound daft, but a Group N car was a modified road car, whereas a World Rally car was a purpose built competition car. And I remember at one point jumping quite regularly from the Group N car in the British Championship to the the Mitsubishi World Rally Car testing it, and just everything worked better. The brakes worked better, the steering was better, the throttle response was better. And that sounds obvious, but what I'm saying is it wasn't difficult to drive a World Rally Car. I'm not saying it wasn't difficult to get the best out of course it was, but the fundamental driving of it was easier than the Group N car.
That's a fundamental thing, even your Subaru Impreza. People jumping into that for the first time thought, Jesus, suspension alone is just incredible.
You jumped in there, and what I was going to try and do is become a time lord for a very, very short period of time and say, okay, right, Ryan Champion, who I remember from 1999, so all those years ago, if I brought him forward to today, what route would you try and go?
Oh, God. And here lies the problem, doesn't it? I mean, the World Junior Championship is a proven route. It's worked. And I think that's what young drivers are aiming for now. And that's the problem, as we've talked about before. People are bypassing national championships because in the past, we all learnt our trade at national championship, as in the British championship I'm talking about, but national level. We all learnt to make our pace notes there. You were good at doing the basics of rallying before the drivers then tried to step up, whereas now drivers miss that level completely and go straight into the World Championship. Then they try and master JWRC. Some do, some don't. And then it's into the R5 world. And you're right that the ladder's kind of gone out the window. And as much as we can talk about, as much as we can fill the ladder with different cars, I'm not sure it alters the route, because now everybody wants to get to World Championship as quick as possible, because ultimately there's no career at national level.
It amazes me that if somebody's doing the Junior World Championship and you've got five rallies, that those are the only five rallies they're going to do that year. I get it, probably because that's the only budget to do. But if you're going to do those five rallies and you want to shine, you're going to have to pick at least five other rallies where you can use that exam car on a rally where you can do a recce and make pace notes. So by the time you get to the next event, you're going to be au fait with all that side of things. You know how the car is going to behave, and you just focus on the intricacies of that particular rally.
And something that you, I mean, this is your speciality, Trevor, but I think that's what is lacking to a certain degree nowadays is that work away from the rallies. I mean, the good drivers do it once they get to the top, but the young drivers need to be doing it on the way up there. They need to be practicing pace notes. They need to be brilliant at pace notes before you start doing the World Championship, or else you're spending money for no good reason whatsoever.
Interesting. Now, you probably didn't hear last week, but I actually said something. I've said this to a couple of young drivers who I've spoke to since we recorded last week's podcast. And I know it's something that you've done right, because you spoke about it before, but we had Killian Duffy on with us last week from On the Pace Notes. He's running this kind of virtual co-driver coaching scheme for various levels. And I put it to him, and he kind of seen the logic behind it, is that while drivers, you know, we're trying to aspire to get to the top at the moment, haven't got perhaps seat time opportunity, what harm is it them doing a virtual online course for €30, €40, whatever it costs, to actually learn the other aspects? Because drivers get sent to learn how to change a wishbone and things like that. My attitude is, well, young drivers should be learning about the other side of the car as well.
Oh, absolutely. You should never stop learning. And, those that can't compete, you can still go down your local roads and think, well, what would I call this? You know, there'll be somebody in your bubble you can make pace notes with. You just need them to write in a book at the end of the day. So there's plenty of things that you can do while not competing that ultimately will help you when you do.
Johnny can pace note our lane now.
Good.
Yeah. We've got him pace note in our lane. So I don't know whether that's too soon, but he's three. But at least he can pace note our lane anyway.
Are his notes faster than yours?
He's much faster than me, mate, honestly. You have no idea how true that statement is, and I'm not even saying it for comedy effect. Listen, but before we're only doing a short podcast this week, because we are, obviously, this is all about doing the winners and losers, so to speak, for the Kielder competition. But I just wanted to pick up on a couple of things that Luke Berry's wrote in MN this week. Jack, your old stomping ground, as it were. Luke's excellent. I think he writes some great stuff. But he did a piece with again, somebody you and I both spoke to for the 95 special, so David Richards, and talking about how we must use Elvin Evans' success to benefit UK Rally, and obviously going back to what they went through with Colin. I'm not entirely sure how we do that now.
Yeah, it's difficult, isn't it? Back when... Did you mention Colin then? Or did I just imagine that?
Yeah, back in 95, you saw him at the success, obviously, that Colin's, you know, the attention that Colin brought from becoming world champion in 95, when we need to perhaps harness that and try and do, you know, do something with Elvin, really. But he does acknowledge, by the way, that the landscape is slightly different. But even
that's now, the thing, isn't it? It's, you know, back then it was Fleet Street were there, and, you know, you had at least sort of 250 to 500,000 spectators over the course of the weekend, you know, depending on what kind of numbers you believe. And obviously it's difficult to, you know, put an admission figure on a rally, but we know how big they were in the mid 90s and towards the end of the 90s as well. And obviously the newspapers did a lot of the work for, you know, promoting drivers in this country and promoting the championship at that point. And obviously specialist media like Motorsport News, you know, as strong as it is, has gone down, you know, as all, you know, print publications have over the past 20 years. So it's a difficult one. And, you know, it's, you know, I think David's got a big role to play in that, using Motorsport UK to push the rallying angle and show how easy it is to get in on a basic level at the bottom and, you know, try and inspire some people to do it. But, you know, ultimately it's, you know, it's Toyota and Elvin Evans' success, and they'll use it to promote their, you know, their company and all their partners and all that kind of stuff. But yeah, it's difficult to know, you know, how to channel that energy of Elvin winning the championship into, you know, helping UK rallying. And it's just something that is, you know, we're gonna have to kind of work out when it happens. But social media is such a big thing now, and you know, if I was Motorsport UK, I'd be you know, planning a social strategy very carefully now. I know the people behind the scenes there do work hard with that kind of thing, but you know, you need to be predicting Elvin's success and working out where to get the most exposure and you know, because it's what we all do, isn't it? We're all looking on Twitter, we're all getting our news there and you know, online. So they need to have a good strategy in place.
Trev, I'll come to you briefly on this before I bring in Ryan, and then we go to a break. I genuinely don't know. You know, obviously Jack's just said, you know, obviously the guys behind the scenes, they're working on a strategy, but outside of that, it seems like we're trying to it's not like, you know, if we were going from 1 to 10 and we were saying that rallying's currently on the UK media scale, you know, if it was like a 6, to take it from a 6 to a 10 doesn't feel like that big a jump. But to me, it feels like rallying's like a 1 or a 2. And yet we're going to try and get it to a 10 if, you know, if fingers crossed he does win the championship.
Well, it's not going to happen, is it? And you think back to, everybody refers back to the Colin eras and Richard even, but Colin was a character that grabbed the attention of most people that are interested in any sort of sport. And it's the diversification of everybody now. You think of all the leisure activities, all the sport activities, both online and real time, that people have and they need to get involved in. And you think of all the time that people spend with their kids and after school stuff. So everything's just getting eaten up with time. We don't have enough time then to focus on things like this and try and grab new people's attention in a sport that we absolutely love and all have done over the years. We ain't going back anywhere, and Jack is 100% right. You know, got to look at things that are evolving organically. And I know, you know, everybody's fascinated with Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram, but TikTok is exploding. Different way to promote on there. It's not just about young girls dancing. There are lots of different ways.
But you've done a lot of research into that, haven't you?
That's everybody's perception. That's what it is, and they switch off and they say, "Well, that's not for us. That's not for a professional brand such as ours." It's rubbish. The organic growth is huge. Same with LinkedIn. Everybody thinks of LinkedIn as a site where you go to get a job, recruitment site. It's far from it. Those guys who are on LinkedIn looking for their jobs at lunchtime, they're also surfing other stuff. There's loads of really good content on there, which is linked to sport, etc. So, yeah, and I honestly think Motorsport UK have got a good handle on it. I know some of the people involved in it. And but Jack's right. You know, you have to be proactive when it comes to it. You have to read ahead and get ready to go when hopefully Elvin achieves what he's going to achieve this year. But don't even worry about Elvin. Look at what Lewis Hamilton has done over 7 years, or more than 7 years, with 7 titles. If that doesn't inspire young kids to have a go at things, then, you know, how are we going to do anything with rallying?
Probably true. Right, just to finish before we go to a break, if, any thoughts from you?
It's unfortunately, you know, I hate to say this, but it is different times, isn't it? You know, if you look at the fans stood at the side of the stage in 1995, the majority were petrol heads, and now we're in a situation where being a petrol head is going to be a thing of the past. In 10 years, we can't even buy a petrol car. You know, and unfortunately, times are changing and people just aren't that into cars anymore. You know, it's all about a form of transport now. It's about transportation. You know, it's the interest in cars is just very different to what it was. And it's certainly difficult to promote the sport at the minute, and that's why, you know, I think we've talked about this a few weeks ago, that the sport has to evolve into something that fits the future as well. And it's certainly difficult. It's very different times to when Colin won the championship, but nonetheless, if we get a British winner of the world championship, it's something we have to jump up and down and shout about.
Very much so, very much so. I just should keep everything crossed. Right, folks, we're going to go to a break, and then we're going to come back with the man behind Kiel the Works team, of course, the people who've supported us for such a long time, done this amazing competition. So we're going to come back with Steve Bolos after the break.
Steve is mega. Can I do the link to this next bit?
Pardon?
Can I do the link to the next bit?
What you mean bring when we come back in?
Just like, oh, well, it's gone now, isn't it? Because I was just going to, like, a link is when you link to the next bit of the podcast.
And I've just done it.
I know, but I was saying, can I do one?
Do you want to? Yeah, okay, fine. This is weird.
No, it's all right. It's all right.
Go on.
No, it's okay. No, it's all right.
Come on.
Well, no, the moment's gone now, Tony. It's fine. Don't worry.
Hi, everyone. This is John Desborough, commentator and presenter on the World Rally Championship. I'm hoping you've seen my debut novel, Breaking Point. If you haven't, check it out on eBay. It's a rollercoaster ride of deceit and blackmail from a golden age of the WRC. And like a good rally, it starts fast and gets faster. Breaking Point, by me, John Desborough, on eBay, now for $7.99.
Welcome back to the final section of Absolute Rally, the bit you've all been waiting for. You didn't want to listen to that stuff at the top, did you? You wanted to know the winners and losers in the Kiel, the competition. Steve Bolos from Kielder, welcome to Absolute Rally for the second time. It's ages since you've been on. Are you well?
Yeah, good, thanks, Tony, and good to be back.
Absolutely. Listen, Jack's here. Jack basically got none of the answers right. So let's just cut to the chase.
I don't believe that for a second.
Honestly, I'm telling you the truth. I'm going to give you the answers that Trevor Agnew gave us. OZ wheels, Compromotive, Sparco, Speedline, Revolution, Team Dynamics, Millie Lights and Lego wheels. we all know, well, that. Go on, Trev, sorry.
I didn't say anything, but Lego's definitely got to be a good shirt, isn't it?
Well, it's close.
Which one, Trev? Which had the Lego wheels?
There's no point in complicating things. Like.
the yellow ones, clearly.
Yeah, so... So there you
did
go.
Did you know that Lego is the world's largest tire manufacturer?
Yes, I did.
Yes, we did. Yes. Thanks, Trev. But yes.
Thanks, Trev. Thanks.
700 million tires a year.
Put your trivia pursuit away now, because we're in the middle of trying to do a very important competition with our show sponsor, Trev.
Yeah, whatever.
Right, we got some famous names from rallying also to enter the competition. So Craig Breen, just for the record, everyone, I did put it out on Twitter. Craig Breen got them all right.
Wow.
Yeah. What? Craig Breen got them all right. Yari Matti got 3 wrong. Julian Porter got 2 wrong.
And I had Craig in my poll, so brilliant. Well done.
Yeah. So yeah, Craig Breen was there. He struggled and then just came back, fired them all in. Fair play. Fair play. Right, wrong answers. Gary Crosland, John Hawkins, Nathan Dillon, Ian Sills, Eric Ockwell, many others. Matthew Jackson entering twice. Basically, you balls yourself up there. So, the right answers. Steve, would you like to tell us what the answers were, please?
Yeah, I'll go through them. So, number one was Toyota Yaris WRC. Number two, Hyundai i20 WRC. Number three, Metro 6R4. Number four was Lancia Stratos. Number five. Now this is the one where Ryan, as the test mule on this, pulled up the competition. So this was, there was two correct answers for this one. Number five. So Ford RS200 or Ford Sierra Cosworth, because it looks like Ford reused the wheels from the RS200 a few years later. Number six was Citroen DS3 WRC. Number seven was a Lancia Delta S4. And number eight was an Audi Quattro.
There you go. So, what I've done, I've got all the right answers, and I've just took a photograph of it, which I'll put out on Twitter in a very, very short time. So, prize number one, Steve, which we're now going to draw for.
Okay.
What's prize number one going to be?
Well, they get to choose whoever the first one out of the hat, we said, because obviously some people might want something different to someone else. Whoever's first out of the hat, they get to choose one of the three prizes that we've put up.
Okay, so. Well, if you can hear this, this is me. Right, so the first name out the hat is... It's not really a hat, it's a plastic cup. Bertie Redfern. Well done, Bertie. Regular tweeter to us and everything else, so... That was the first name out of the cup.
Long-time listener, first-time caller, Bertie Redford.
But no, he's legend. The second name out the hat is Quentin James. Another regular who also should get a bobble hat, which we'll
talk
about.
He's a bobble hat winner from Ryan's comp a few weeks ago, which we need to get out to him.
Yeah, which we need to get out. And the last one...
Save us some postage.
Yeah. Positive thinking, Steve. I like it. Last but not least, Gavin Sheehan. So, there you go. There's our three winners for the Kielder competition. Now, Steve, you've really put yourself in... Because if we both asked for the same thing, you're going to have a problem.
Oh, well, surely Bertie gets the choice, and it depends on the other two.
What the other two are left. Okay, so order...
This is game show territory, surely. This is what happens.
I should have some funky music. I will. I'll make sure there's funky music behind this as well. So Bertie Redfern came out first, Quentin James came out second, and Gavin Sheehan came out third. So Gavin, unfortunately, you're going to get whatever's left. So there you go. So Steve, thank you very much for being part of the podcast, and obviously coming up with this fantastic difficult quiz, which has thrown the experts in WRC, including our expert bobble hatters in Yari Matti, Craig Breen and Julian Porter, absolutely massively. So well done.
No, it's been really good. It was quite entertaining putting it together, as always, with these things. And the only problem is we've set the bar quite high now on what we do in the future. So,
I think the next thing you should do, Steve, is co-driver's pencils.
All right. Yeah, got it. Okay. How about Trev? How about co-driver's hieroglyphics?
Yeah, there could be a bit of that, actually.
I don't want to see your pencil, Trev.
Who's the navigator?
Pace note pages. Whose pace notes are these?
Exactly. Well,
I like
think.
That. Oh, that's good.
Not bad, actually. Everyone will start researching that, won't they?
There'd be a lot of
interviews. We'll
Trev, if only you had a podcast to do your own quizzes on.
Sorry. Take your train set and stick...
Hey, Tony, before I go, just on navigators, I need to chip in with your analogy from the last few weeks.
Go on.
So your goalkeeper analogy.
Yes.
Obviously, I know you like it, and it's a good one. But I actually think the navigator's position is even more difficult than a goalkeeper.
Because
I've just listened to the, I think it was last week's yesterday, and I thought, you know what? I think it's even tougher because at least the goalkeeper makes to make some blinding saves and get some plaudits. The navigators, honestly, they could go through a stage, set at a really quick time. The driver takes all the plaudits. An engineer might get a nod, say what a great setup. The poor old navigator, he never gets a chance to make that good save. So,
I'm so glad we haven't got Trev on video at the moment. I'm so glad.
whoa, hold on. But on the back of what we were talking about last week, Mr. Lukianoff has announced that he's been the co-driver. Now, this might just be the tipping point. I'm not going to judge him in any way. But what's happened is Dmitry Ermev has lost a chance to become European rally champion on the back of one mistake. Wow. So let's hope Mr. Lukianoff doesn't make any more before the end of the year.
There you go.
We'll start a crusade, Trev, on getting co-drivers to take some credit and take at least a little bit of the attention when things go well. I think that's
Yeah, good luck with that. I'll never catch on.
You never ever catch on. But hopefully what will catch on is the love for our sponsors and for Absolute Rally folks. Thank you for downloading the podcast this week. Jack, Trev, Ryan and Steve making the fleeting appearance, making the draw and announcing the prizes. Thank you all very much. We'll be back same time, same place in your little podcast hole next week.
Absolute Rally, powered by the Kielder Works team. Spread the word and download the podcast every week.